sending a briefing from the Office of Health Standards and Compliance on the annual performance plan. It is a meeting on the 30th of March, 2022. And I welcome yourselves, also all members from the department, all members from the public, all members from the media. You are all very welcome to this meeting. Ms. Machalamba, can we get an indication of attendance, confirmation of members, and also apologies?
Good morning and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Jacobs, Mr. Siwela, Ms. Clark, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembekwayo, Ms. Chirwa, and Mr. Van Staden. I haven't received any apologies, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me then also welcome the PLO of the Ministry, Mr. Joe Hutler, to give us an indication who is here from the Ministry and the Department. Is Mr. Hutler present yet?
No, Chair. He is not on the platform.
Just give me a moment for me to find out. Thank you, honorable members. A little bit of indulgence. Thank you. Ms. Machalamba?
Yes, sir.
There seems to be an issue with the login details not having been received by some of the members.
I'm not sure what happened. I've forwarded it to Ms. Geller, Chair. I'm not sure what happened.
Thank you very much. And also on the PC group, if you don't mind, if it's not there, I can be talking under correction now.
Yes, it's on WhatsApp also, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I'm in. Thank you, Sis Wiyokazi.
All right. It's a pleasure. Thank you. Honorable members, so we welcome all of you to this meeting. This is a meeting on the 30th of March of the Portfolio Committee on Health, where we will be receiving a briefing by the OHSC, the Office of Health Standard Compliance, on the annual performance plan for 2022-2023. You are all very welcome. Can we restart with attendance and apologies, Mr. Machalamba?
Sorry, Chair, I didn't get that. I was still busy with Ms. Geller on the side.
Oh, okay. Are you able to give me a new indication of attendance, please?
Okay, Chair. Present is Dr. Jacobs, Ms. Geller, Dr. Havard, Mr. Sewela, Ms. Clark, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembekwayo, Ms. Chirwa, Mr. Van Staden, and Mr. Imam Sheikh. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, and no apologies. Thank you. Mr. Joe Hutter, will you be able to give us an indication who is here from the ministry and from the department?
Yes, good morning, Honorable Chair. Am I audible, Honorable Chair?
Sorry. You are very audible, thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and colleagues. The on the platform from the Office of Health Standard Compliance, Honorable Chair, we have the Chairperson of the Board of the Office of Health Standard Compliance, Dr. Ernest Kinoshi, and the CEO of the Office of Health Standard Compliance, Dr. Spiwe Ndaweni, who lead the team, and they will take it from here. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hartler. We will go straight on to the OHSC, the Chairperson of the Board. We can please introduce his team, and then also they can go straight on to the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Dr. Ernest Kinoshi. I am the Chair of the Board of the Office of Health Standards Compliance. Thank you very much for inviting us to make the presentation today on the OHSC's 2022-2023 APP, but as well as the budget forecast for the 2022-2023 and the MTF period. Before I hand over to the CEO, Dr. Ndaweni, to do the presentation, I would just like to ask the board chair, the board secretary, to confirm members of the board who are present today. Ms. Padayachi. Ms. Padayachi?
You are muted, Ms. Padayachi.
Okay. If she can't confirm, I've seen Professor Chikte, and I've seen also Professor Chetty and Dr. Simelani, who are on the, if I have missed any, they can just say it out now, those who have just joined. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me hand over to the CEO, Dr. Ndaweni, who will do the presentation, and then we will then take it from there, Chair. Thank you very much. Dr. Ndaweni.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to the Honourable Chairperson and the Honourable Committee members. I would like to introduce the members of the management team that are here. Chair, I also noticed Professor Chikte and Mem Muntsiwa as board members, and the members of the management team. We've got the Executive Manager of Compliance Inspectorate, Ms. Dikeledi Tsukudu. We've got the Director of Communications and Stakeholder Relations, Mr. Ricardo Mashakanya. We've got the Executive Manager of Complaints and Investigations, Dr. Donna Jacobs. We've got the Executive Manager of Health Standards Development, Ms. Winnie Muliko. We've got the Director of Monitoring and Evaluation, Mr. Mondi Govuzela, as well as the Board Secretariat, Ms. Kantha Padayachi. Honorable Chair, on behalf of the Office of Health Standard Compliance, I bring to the committee the OHSC
annual performance plan for the financial year 2022-23, which is aligned to the organization's strategy plan of 2020-2025. The amendment of the National Health Act in 2013 established the OHSC as an independent entity to regulate quality in the healthcare sector. The OHSC is therefore autonomous in its decision-making and independent in its regulatory functions. The legislative mandate of the OHSC is derived from the Constitution as guided by Section 9, 12, and particularly Section 27 of the Bill of Rights, which confers certain human rights to everyone, such as healthcare services, including reproductive health. Section 78 of the Act details the mandate of the OHSC, which is to protect and promote the health and safety of users of health services by monitoring and enforcing compliance by health establishments with norms and standards that are prescribed and promulgated by the Minister of Health for the entire national health system. We also receive, consider, and investigate, as well as dispose complaints received from the public that relate to non-compliance with the prescribed norms and standards. In doing so, we seek to do in a procedurally fair, economic, and expeditious manner. The norms and standards that are applicable to different categories of health establishments in the country were first promulgated in 2018 by the Minister of Health. The office then undertook a preparatory period for both the public and private sector for the implementation of the standards. The inspection with the norms and standards commenced in 2019-20, and we then started to certify health establishments as compliant or non-compliant with the standards. Our overall priority is to contribute through regulatory activities in improving the quality of services and strive towards a better health outcome as captured in the OHSC vision, which is consistent, safe, and quality healthcare for all. In undertaking our activities, we monitor and enforce healthcare safety and quality standards independently, impartially, fairly, and fairly on behalf of the users of the services. The OHSC's values are informed by the South African Constitution, as well as the Bartubelli principles, which really are guiding us and shaping our organizational culture and govern our day-to-day activities. We are all required to maintain high standards of proper professional conduct and integrity at all times. These values are grounded on strong ethical considerations, such as human dignity, accountability, transparency, quality of healthcare, safety, and integrity. The overall desired outcome and the impact of the work of the Office of Health Standard Compliance would then contribute to two distinct but interdependent regulatory outcomes. The first being the reduction in avoidable mortality, morbidity, and avoid harm in all health establishments, both public and private, through offering reliable and safe health services. The second impact would be the improvement in the availability, the responsiveness, and acceptability of health services by the users. And we hope that by that, we'll then improve the patient experience in the healthcare sector. In addition, we contribute to enhancing universal access to the quality of services. The United Nations Sustainable Development Goal 3, which is good health and well-being, has bold and emphasized the targets to end HIV, TB, and malaria. The SDG 3, again, has targets for countries to achieve universal health coverage and financial risk protection. The South African National Development Plan of 2030, Chapter 10, Priority 5, as well as Goal 8, refers to financing universal healthcare coverage and also the implementation of the National Health Insurance. This then brings us to the link between the OHSC and the National Health Insurance. The OHSC is required to inspect and certify health establishments as compliant with a set of norms and standards, as well as monitor the risk. By then, those health establishments who receive a compliance certificate will then be eligible to contract or be contracted in the NHI fund. It then indicates that the certification of compliance with the regulated standard is a prerequisite for all health establishments that would want to participate in the NHI fund. Part B of our annual performance plan is the strategic focus and the overview. The strategic plan for the APP for 2022-23 considered the macro and micro environments within which we operate. The macro environment impact, referring to the COVID-19 impact on the workforce, the stakeholder analysis, particularly in the private sector, and the strengthening of the functions of OHSC as a regulator in the healthcare sector. The OHSC board has revised the organogram to align it to its mandate. The OHSC board is the accounting authority and responsible for the governance and the oversight. At the moment, the health ombud is functionally located within the OHSC, although the health ombud reports directly to the Minister of Health. As I go through the presentation, I will then refer to the other functionaries of the organization, which are indicated on my right-hand side. In the APP, we detail the situational analysis. The contents of the five-year strategic plan have not been changed and remain as per our submission to this committee, and that is the strategic plan of 2019-20 to 2024-25. We have developed the APP for 2022-23 as informed by the revised 2020-2024 medium-term strategic framework. Improving the quality of healthcare is a critical component of the National Development Plan outcome, which is to strengthen the health system effectiveness through enabling external assessments of compliance with prescribed standards. The plan considered the health sector constraints experienced through the COVID-19 pandemic. The pandemic has strained healthcare systems and exposed the lack of capacity as well as the weaknesses which we all have been aware of. Similarly, in the organizational environment, which we have detailed in our APP, the pandemic has also placed enormous strain on the operational environment of the office. We have, over this period, observed a significant increase in the number of complaints that were received from the general public. However, due to the limited budgetary allocation over the MTF period, the OHSC has limited capacity to increase human resources in order for us as an organization to increase the number of inspections, to manage the complaints and investigations timelessly, as well as to develop more standards. Now, the other impact of these fiscal constraints is that they do not allow us as an organization to expand and decentralize. One of our aim, as informed by the business case, which was adopted by the board, which is a pathway and framework of OHSC's operations in the next 5 years, one critical activity is the expansion and the establishment of regional offices or satellites of the OHSC. However, given the current financial constraints, were unable to undertake this activity, although it remains a prime in the work that we do. The information communication and technology systems uptime, we've been able to maintain them at 99% availability. We report this to the committee because we have moved offices. However, we're able to maintain the availability of IT support. However, we realize that being a mainly data-driven organization, it is important that we do some adjustments in our IT systems so that it is optimized and we're able to have interoperability of the information, the data that we collect from inspections as well as gather from the complaints that we investigate. The executive manager's vacancies, particularly for complaints, compliance inspectorate, as well as complaints management have been filled. And these were posts that were vacant when we last came to the committee. However, I must indicate that the newly adopted organogram has other critical appointments and positions that need to still to be filled. And these would be dependent on the availability of funds. One of the critical performance delivery functions of the office is the development of inspection tools after the norms and standards are promulgated by the Minister of Health. We had indicated previously that in our work, we will use a phased-in approach simply because we will not be able to develop all the tools at the same time, but we will develop the tools. And our approach was to start with the tools that are required at primary healthcare level, which is the entry point of our services by the users. We have since appointed contractual staff that are currently in the health standards design and development unit that assist with the development of tools. We also wish to report to the committee that the OHSC is collaborating with the National Department of Health in the Quality Learning Centers project, which are meant to be used as hubs for quality improvements. We'll still undertake our work as a regulator independently in assisting with conducting inspections. And we do report that we have received additional funds to inspect the quality learning centers from Treasury. One of the important activities is to maintain contact with our stakeholders, particularly in those areas that are hard to reach, as we were once advised by the committee that we needed to go out to the areas where the work of the OHSC might not be known. We have since developed a community radio campaign where we reach out to the local radio stations and discuss with our stakeholders the work of the OHSC as opposed to the usual face-to-face contact that we hold with our stakeholders. And this was in part to overcome the potential barriers posed by the COVID-19 pandemic. Honorable Chair, we also wish to provide this update to the committee with regards to the development of inspection tools. The clinic inspection tool has been finalized and it's being implemented. The community health center inspection tool also in implementation, as well as the district hospital inspection tool and the regional hospital inspection tool. We're also pleased that we report for the first time that we have now the private sector acute hospital inspection tool near finalization. The tool has been finalized after a consultative period, which took quite some time, as the OHSC had to also learn and be familiarized with the service delivery platform in the private sector. We're at a stage now where we are conducting training workshops in preparation of the implementation. It is important that we also inform this committee that we have received collaboration with the private sector and they all are working with the OHSC with regards to the work that we do as a regulator of quality and safety in the healthcare system. The next three tools which I'm going to mention have been drafted. They are undergoing a process of review and incorporating inputs from the stakeholders prior to final adoption of the tools. And these are the tools for the central hospitals and the provincial tertiary hospital tools. We have now the second draft of the general practice tool, This is the tool that would be used in general practices. We are at a stage of consulting with some of the forum for private general practitioners. And after that, we'll then also start with consulting the GP community structures, as well as the final adoption of the tool. We have submitted the emergency medical services norms and standards, and we are awaiting promulgation thereof. And once that is done, we'll then commence with the development of the tools. In the APP, we did indicate, or we do indicate, that there are no significant changes to the OHSC's legislative mandate and other relevant mandates. However, we have commenced the review of the 2016 procedural regulations. These are regulations that detail the functioning of all the components of the Office of Health Standard Compliance and the handling of complaints by the Ombud. Once this is done, this document will then be gazetted for everyone to be aware of. We then come to Part C in the APP, which is measuring our performance, where we have then indicated our projected targets for 2022-23. The OHSC APP is aligned to the priorities of the medium-term strategic framework. Over the next 5 years, the OHSC strategic objectives are structured into 5 outcomes, which are aligned to the goals in the MTSF. The 5 outcomes are a fully functional regulatory office of the Health Standard Compliance, compliance with the norms and standards effectively monitored, improved quality of healthcare services that are rendered to the users, and also we wish to facilitate achievement of compliance with the norms and standards regulations for different categories of health establishments. And once compliance is increased, we then would wish to see more health establishments, both public and private, receiving the certificate of compliance. The framework of the delivery of our work, as per mandate, is comprised of 5 programs. Program 1, administration. Program 2, which is the largest, compliance inspectorate. Program 3, in which the health ombud is located, complaints management. Program 4, health standards design, analysis and support. Program 5, which is certification and enforcement. Honorable Chair, it is important that we highlight at this stage that we do operate within a limited financial and human resource constraint, which adversely does restrict us in achieving the overall organizational objectives. However, there is quite a lot that we have done thus far to try and streamline our operations. Program 1 is a support program comprised of human resources, information, communication and technology, communication and stakeholder relations, the board and governance activities, finance and supply chain management. Now, with regards to the human resource management, we've got 3 output indicators that we are monitoring and that are in our APP. The first one, the percentage of vacancies filled within 4 months of the vacancy existing. Here we wish to monitor the speed with which we're able to fill the positions that are vacant. In 2022-23, we've put a target of 90%. The last audited performance was 42%, that is for 2020-21. I must indicate that most of these positions were filled, however, they were not within the 4 month period. For 2022-23, we have this new indicator, which is the percentage vacancy rate per year. We wish to monitor our vacancy rate and we wish to keep it at 7% or even below for 2022-23. 6% and 5% for the outer years, that is 23-24 and 24-25. We are required by the Act to train and certify all our inspectors prior to them conducting inspections. And this is done through a very comprehensive training curriculum. We have put a percentage of 95% for 2022-23 of all our available inspectors to be trained. The last audited performance in 2020-21 was at 80%, mainly because of some of the inspectors that left the organization, but also this being quite an intense training module, which takes time. We do wait for the numbers until we're able to offer the training. This next slide indicates the very same output indicators. However, here we give the quarterly breakdown until we reach the overall target as indicated in the previous slide. The next sub-program is information, communication, and technology to provide the infrastructure and systems in order for us as a business to operate effectively and efficiently. And this is also where we undertake long-term planning in terms of the day-to-day support, as well as what we need as an entity in order to expand our core services. We report two output indicators in our APP. The first being the percentage of information, communication, and technology available for our core services. Here we refer to inspections, to complaints, as well as standards development. And we wish to achieve 95% of this availability. We've been able to maintain at least performance of 99%. The next output indicator is the availability of ICT for all OHSC support services. And once again, we have a target of 95% for 2022-23, which we hope to maintain also in the outer years. And this is the quarterly breakdown of the same targets. The next sub-program in program one is communication and stakeholder relations. This is quite a critical sub-program, as it is imperative for all the stakeholders to be aware of what we do, our roles, our responsibilities, as well as our powers as the regulator in the healthcare sector. But also this is a program where we establish and maintain effective stakeholder engagements and also develop partnerships that are mutually beneficial to us as the regulator. We have put two indicators in the APP. The first one being the number of community stakeholder engagements to raise public awareness of the OHSC and the health ombud in the public sector. For 2022-23, we wish to have 12 of these engagements. Our last audited performance, we're able to reach the 12. And the next output indicator is the same. However, here we wish to have these engagements in the private sector. And we have for 2022-23 put a target of 8, and this is the quarterly breakdown. This last sub-program in program one is finance and supply chain management. It is important for us as an entity to remain accountable and transparent, and also to demonstrate accountability in our finances as well as in our program performance. And by doing that, we wish to then obtain an unqualified audit. Honorable Chair, we're pleased that over the years, the Office of Health Standard Compliance has managed to always obtain an unqualified audit by the Auditor General. And we are working and we hope and will always strive once again in 2022-23, as we have indicated in our APP, to maintain this record of an unqualified audit or even improve. Program two, compliance inspectorate, which is where our inspectors are located, who go out to the field to conduct inspections. And of course, the fundamental outcome here beyond the inspections is compliance with the norms and standards, as well as the effective monitoring of these norms and standards and eventually improvements of health outcomes. We have five output indicators. The first one refers to the inspections that we conduct in the public sector in compliance with the norms and standards. Honorable members would note
that in the beginning, from 2018-19, 19-20, we were between 600 and 700 in as far as the output of inspections. We experienced some financial challenges in 2020-21-22, where we reported to the committee the reduction in the targets for inspections. We have seen and realized some savings from, you know, the accommodation costs, the travel costs during the pandemic. And we also have undertaken intense processes of resource rationalization and streamlining internally. We therefore report that in 2022-23, we are projecting to conduct 788 inspections in the public sector and 823 for 2023 and 2024-25. For the private sector, as I indicated, that the process of developing the inspection tools was a lengthy one, and also indicated that some of the tools are now finalized. For 2022-23, we will conduct, or we wish to conduct, 52 of the 431 denominator of the private health establishments. The third output indicator refers to additional inspections, or what we term as re-inspections. In our operations, we first start by conducting an inspection, and the outcome of an inspection would either be issuing a compliance certificate or a notice of compliance. The notice of compliance will then detail those breaches in the norms and standards, and also the health establishment would be given time frames within which they need to undertake remedial action with regards to improving the breaches in those norms and standards. We then return back to those facilities to conduct what we call additional inspections or re-inspections to determine whether remedial action was taken. We therefore have a target of 100% because we do wish to conduct all the re-inspections that the office must undertake. The fourth output indicator refers to the publishing and the reporting on inspections. We are required biannually to produce reports which we put in our name in our website, where we indicate the names and the locations of the health establishments that have been inspected. Now, for 2022-23, we have a target of two of these reports, which will then publish biannually. The last output indicator is the consolidated annual inspection report, which we do bring to this committee on a yearly on yearly basis, where we then look at all the inspections and we then conduct in-depth trend analysis and make recommendations to, into the entire healthcare sector. And this is an annual report which we produced, and once again, we have indicated so. This is also the quarterly breakdown of the targets. The next program is complaints management and the office of the health ombud. Again, here the outcome would be improvement in quality of health services after we have disposed and resolved the complaints or investigated the complaints that were submitted to the Office of Health Standard Compliance. The output indicators in these programs are based on the level of risks of the complaints that are received. Some would be low risk, some would be medium risks, some would be high risks. Depending on the risk level, we'll then dispose of those complaints within specified time periods. The first output indicator is the percentage of low risk complaints that are resolved within 25 working days of lodgement in the call center. For 22-23, we have a target of 80%. We've fairly been able to reach this target over the years, and that is because some of the complaints we then work with other regulators and refer to them where we feel that they are not within the jurisdiction of the Office of Health Standard Compliance or even the Health Ombud. The next output indicator is the percentage of user complaints that are resolved through assessment within 30 working days. Now, this indicator, we are largely dependent on the responsiveness of the health establishment or the complainant that has lodged the complaint. What it means is that there will always be additional information required from the health establishment in order for the office to proceed with the resolution of the complaint. It is for that reason that our last audited performance was not very good at almost at 2.4%. We have put 65% as the target for 2022-23. However, I do indicate to the committee some of the challenges that we're experiencing. The next output indicator is the percentage of complaints resolved within 6 months through investigations, and we have a target of 15%. And the next one, those that are resolved within 12 months with a target of 5%. And the last output indicator, those that are resolved through investigation within 18 months, which with a target of 2%. The last three indicators, these then refer to investigations. It is our experience that these tend to be lengthy depending on the complexity of the complaint that is being investigated. Honorable Chair, I must indicate to the members that this component, same as other components of the OHSC, is also very short-staffed. In fact, we have, through some of the funds that we have reallocated within the organization, supported this component by contractual workers on an annual basis. Again, this is the quarterly breakdown of the targets that have just been explained. Program 4, Health Standards Design and Analysis. This is the program that develops the norms and standards. In developing the norms and standards, we always consult with the National Department of Health in terms of their priority list in the development of standards. And this is also where we analyze and triangulate all our data and be able to make recommendations in quality assurance or those trends that we establish based on the work that we do. And this is also where the inspectors are trained. The output indicators for this program, as we have indicated in our APP, refer to the responsibilities of the Office of Health Standard Compliance in Section 79 of the Act, where the office, particularly the board, is required to provide recommendations in the entire healthcare system. These could be recommendations that are specific to a province, to a district or sub-district, or even national recommendations. Now, the first output indicator is the number of recommendations reports for improvement in the healthcare sector made to relevant authorities. For 2022-23, we have a target of 3, and that is because we finalized these recommendations after we have conducted in-depth analysis of our data and our trend analysis, and also having researched and benchmarked with some of the regulators similar to us in other parts of the world. The second one is the number of guidance workshops conducted to facilitate implementation of the norms and standards regulations. As a fairly new regulator, it is important that we orientate and familiarize our stakeholders with the implementation of the norms and standards. And for 2022-23, we wish to conduct 24 of these engagements. Again, this is the quarterly breakdown. The last program, certification and enforcement. This is a program where we would certify those health establishments that are compliant and issue a compliance certificate. In instances where we determine that there is consistent non-compliance with the norms and standards, even after we have issued a notice of compliance, the office is empowered to take enforcement action, and this is where we would do so. And our output indicators then track the functions that I've just explained. The first output indicator is the percentage of health establishments that are issued with a certificate of compliance within 15 days of the date of the receipt of the final inspection report. For 2022-23, we have put a target of 100% because all those that should receive a compliance certificate, the office should be able to issue such. The next output indicator is the percentage of health establishments against which enforcement action has been initiated within 10 days of the final inspection report. Again, here we wish to take enforcement action where it is necessary and where we are guided to do so by our protocols. We have, again, in the APP, put a target of 100%. The last being the reporting of the actions that of the two output indicators, where we biannually we put in our website a report that indicates those health establishments where we have issued compliance certificate and enforcement action taken. This, again, Chair, would be the quarterly breakdown of the targets for certification and enforcement. Honourable Chair, I wish to invite my colleague, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Mapata, to assist me with the next couple of slides. Over to you, Mr. Mapata.
Thank you, CEO, and good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. I will take the members through the MTF budget estimates. On the slide that appears on the screen, the first column should be 2020-21 and not 2021-21. Just also to make the members aware that pre-COVID-19 in 2019-20, the overall expenditure for the OHSC was 158 million. So in 2020-21, because of the COVID situation, we were greatly restricted in terms of some of the activities, such as inspections and traveling. So the expenditure went down to 135. So through this budget, as we can see in the outer year, 2024-25, which shows 159 million. So essentially, this takes us back to the pre-COVID-19 period, which was 2019-20, where our expenditure was at 158 million. So we can see that there's a decline in 2023-24 to 152 million, as advised by the National Treasury. But we will await the whether there will be an indication of any revision to these figures. But for 2022-23, we are working at 157 million. We can go to the next slide. And on this slide, we can see that the dotted line is fairly flat, which shows that there isn't much of a difference over the years. On average, the overall increase is about 1.7% over the MTF period, which is quite below the rate of inflation, which is projected to be between 4.5% to 5% over the MTF period. So there isn't much of a significant growth in terms of our budget allocation. You can see in 2023-24, it goes down by about 3%. Thank you. We can go to the next slide. And this slide shows the allocations per division. And we can see that the biggest division in terms of allocation is the compliance inspectorate. And although corporate services shows an allocation of 33%, the single biggest item here is office space, which houses all the units, inspectorate, complaints, the ombuds, certification, enforcement. So that is the single biggest expenditure item under corporate services, together with all the supporting activities for office space, such as security, maintenance, cleaning services. We can go to the next slide. In terms of core versus support functions, on average, 58% goes to the core functions and 43% goes to the support functions. The core functions is inspectorate, certification, enforcement, standard development, complaints, management, and the ombud. Next slide, please. I've already explained this one. We can skip it. In terms of the employee distribution, the compliance inspectorate unit gets 43% of the employees on this program. And then we can see on the next slide, that on slide 53, next slide, please. Uh, Next slide. Yes, this slide, that 72% of the employees in terms of distribution are in the core functions, with 28% in the support functions. So there's a strong bias in terms of staff towards the core functions of the organization, in line with the, its founding mandate and objectives. Thank you. Next slide, please. In terms of economic classification, based on the nature of the work that we do, which relies largely on people to do the work, so on average, two-thirds of the budget goes to compensation of employees, and the board gets 1%. Capital expenditure is about 1% as well, on average, with goods and services averaging about 30%. So there is more allocation towards staff and numbers to enable the OHSC to be able to do its work. Next slide, please. As I've indicated, the budget increases by an average of 1.7% over the next 3 years, which is way below the inflation rate. The budget basically takes us back to where we were in 2019-20, which indicated expenditure of 158 million as audited by the AG. And through this budget, as we have seen from the targets, there's also an increase in terms of the number of facilities to be inspected, just almost about 800. But when one takes into account the re-inspections that will arise following the first inspections, that number will go over 1,000 in a single year. So we can go to the next slide. As I've already indicated, 72% of staff are in the core operations of the OHSC, with 28% being in the support functions of the OHSC. I think this is the last slide. Thank you, CEO. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. That is the end of our presentation.
The CFO. Over to you again, Dr. Jacobs.
Yes, thank you very much. I seem to have lost my connection there for a short moment, but I'm right back. Thank you very much for the presentation, Dr. Kanoshi, and your team, and the CEO and CFO. We have a number of members who would want to ask some questions. There are some questions with you. Before I've indicated that Honorable Chirwa is on that list, so I'm not certain whether this is something else, Honorable Chirwa.
Sorry, Chairperson. I was asking to go first, if that's not a problem for the listed speakers, because I have to leave now at 10:30 a.m. at 10:30 and then come back like at 11.
You're very welcome. So Honorable Chirwa first, Honorable Ismail second, Honorable Temba Kwayo, is Honorable Gela is third, Honorable Dr. Temba Kwayo is fourth. Those are the names I had received. Are there any other members who want to raise any questions with the OHSC?
Yes, please, Chairperson, Honorable Wilson. I have put a note on the group. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I'm covered, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Chirwa, we start with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the OHSC for their presentation. Like everybody else, I have a few questions. I want to know what informs the targets that they set.
like if they can just break down what informs each target that they set and who makes these decisions, and if they're like a conglomerate workshop situation, just to explain the situation of getting to these targets that they usually do for themselves. And then number two, I mean, the lease payment thing is a concern for accommodation, right? The last time that they were presenting the APP to the committee, we recommended that you purchase property and not lease it out. I want to ask what the current status is. Like, are you working towards that? Is that going to happen, or are you just going to be leasing your offices for a long time? I'm asking this because the issue of finance is something that you raise all the time. And as a committee, we've noted things or places where you can cut down on costs to cover other things, and accommodation being one of them. And the second thing that we'd also recommended as a way of cutting costs is that you insource your cleaners and your security guards. And this has also not happened. I want to know what the reason for that is, especially because the cost and the finance thing keeps coming up, but the committee has given recommendations on, I mean, it won't amount to a lot of money, but it will amount to something, as opposed to not having that money at all because you are leasing or because you are going the tender route. And then thirdly, your allocation for complaints management and ombudsman rule change shows a decrease of almost 2%. Can you just please explain this situation? Was there less allocated to this particular area? And if so, why? Because the other parts on the same graph, I see it's a different situation, but in real change, it shows a decrease. So can you just explain to the committee what that particularly means? And number five, I'm curious about your timeline of resolving cases. You've stated in your presentation, even though it wasn't in the document you sent us in detail, on the cases that are reported to the ombudsman. I want to know, like, isn't there like a table to show how long you should respond to cases pending on a severity of the case? I'm asking this because I want to know where then do ordinary people, or what then is, the hope of cases, of emergency cases being resolved by the ombudsman relating to ordinary people. And also on that particular aspect, I don't think there is enough marketing that's done, by the ombudsman, or information that's being brought out. I mean, this could also be the fault of the Department of Health in general. But I think there is some kind of aspect that forces, or that should enforce you guys to reach out to people so they know that they can reach out to the ombudsman, especially in these health facilities. For instance, when it comes to grievance cases in these facilities, we only see the numbers of certain people, not necessarily the ombudsman and their posters. So we'll see like the clinic, the facility management, or the complaint center, but not necessarily the ombudsman or the OHSC. Regarding the standards of the facility, regarding equipment and all of those things that we know exist in our healthcare facilities. So I want to know, how will then the OHSC counter that particular part to make sure that there is more of a relationship between ordinary people that step in and out of healthcare facilities that have situations and don't necessarily have access to all of these portfolio committee members or the MPs in general, because there is an entity that's supposed to carry that through as well. And I mean, some of the issues that you've noted as well from the OHSC are things that you've raised countless of times. I think that also the onus is also on this particular portfolio committee to raise them strongly to the Department of Health, even though we have been, right? I mean, we know our crisis, our political crisis in the country. But I think there should be much more effort in ensuring that accountability takes place, because that's also part of our responsibility as well, as members of the portfolio committee and as members of parliament in general. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to everyone. Thank you so much for the presentation. I also have a few clarity-seeking questions, please. My first question is, the indicator for inspection of private healthcare facilities will increase from 15% to 20% over the MTF. Now, this is actually very low, in my opinion. Is there a particular reason why these targets are so low? You know, can these targets not be scaled up over the MTF? Now, the National Department of Health, you know, wants to implement the NHI.
How is this going to be majorly achieved if the OHSC can only manage to inspect 20% of public healthcare facilities, you know, in this budget period? My second question is that I see a considerable decrease in the 2022-2023 budget allocation to the health standards design, analysis and support. Now, please can we be advised as to how this deficit will be mitigated and how this will impact on the program's activities? You know, I also want to get some clarification on, you know, can the OHSC actually explain to us the process of determining annual targets? Because some of these targets, you know, really seem to be very small. You know, maybe we just expect a lot from the OHSC. And if we could maybe understand how you actually go about, you know, deciding on these particular targets set. I want to touch on lease payments as well. I mean, lease payments in the 2021-2022 was allocated 12.5 million. Now, these are the highest expenditure under goods and services in Program 1. And it's projected to increase to 15.6 million over the MTF. Now, has the OHSC actually considered purchasing its own premises? You know, this will actually eliminate, you know, and would be rather be a cheaper option. I just want to get your view on this. My next question is, you know, the safety of healthcare professionals and patients in healthcare facilities remain a challenge. Does the OHSC, through its norms and standards, assess the safety of hospitals and clinics? If you remember, there are quite a few, you know, news flashes in the media considering, you know, nurses and doctors being, you know, shot and so forth right in front of hospitals. So I just wanted to get some information of where does the OHSC stand with this year and what do you do, you know, with these healthcare facilities? How do we actually, you know, address or assist in helping to address this matter? Now, in light of the negative impact of COVID-19 and budgetary constraints, what steps has the entity taken to fill some of its vacancies? Now, I know you say that you've set targets and, you know, some of these targets are being reached, et cetera, et cetera. But we know that, you know, essentially shortage of staff is the core of you actually reaching optimum, you know, and I'm just trying to understand, you know, how are you mitigating this or how are you actually addressing this matter? I'm going to also be touching on, you know, the OHSC receiving complaints from residents at large. You know, I'm going to actually mention one public healthcare facility, the OR Tambo Hospital in Volksburg. Personally, I've received so many complaints, which some of them I've asked the residents to please put in writing, and I've escalated it to the health ombuds and the OHSC. You know, simple things like cleanliness. I mean, a public healthcare facility is one of the core where, you know, cleanliness is essential. But as soon as you enter the hospital, you get a bad stench. And I've done some oversight visits there with residents as well. It's really quite shocking. Secondly is that the treatment of patients when they come in. I've had somebody highlighting to me that, you know, we went to the hospital and the patient was, she was heavily pregnant. She was obviously going to be giving birth. She was already 3 centimeters, you know, and the hospital actually turned her away. She ended up at a totally different hospital in Johannesburg, where she's from, you know, the eastern, more from the Benoni area. And it's quite shocking the way patients are actually being treated, whether it's COVID or no COVID. The reality is that we expect services, or residents expect services from hospitals, and the mannerism of how these patients are actually, and the families of these patients are actually treated is worrisome. So I just wanted to know, you know, how does the OHSC actually deal with this? And I know you've stated that, you know, you have this this complaint sent to you, then you have a time period of 25 days or 30 days or whatever the matter is, and then you know, sometimes the delays take place because the hospitals don't give you responses on time. I find this unacceptable. And sometimes you don't get, you know, the relevant responses from the complainant, which is obviously also unacceptable considering that they have actually, you know, highlighted this complaint to you. But, I mean, how, if you're just looking at OR Tambo itself, this hospital has been like this for years and years and years. And how does the OHSC and the health ombuds for that matter? But I just want to understand from the OHSC's perspective, how do you actually
ensure maybe you have done a visit there. But how do you actually make sure that, you know, these hospitals adhere to the necessary requirements and compliance as required, you know? Please, if you could just explain to me that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I've got a few questions that I want to ask. The first question, Chairperson, CEO, you have indicated that the number of inspections you have conducted, and in my view, that is very low. My issue is really on the private sector. We are in the process of finalizing the NHI bill, and the stories we have been hearing of cooperation from the parliamentary question, the minister recently responded to, where the question was asked, asking about babies who have been stolen from the hospitals, and the only information was from the public sector. There was nothing from the private sector because they didn't cooperate. Do you experience any problems in accessing a private hospital in your work? My second question, CEO, as public representative, we as members of parliament receive a lot of complaints from the public about the bad treatment they are receiving from the health facility, both public and private. Can you share with us the experience of the OHSC on this? On whether these complaints reach you, and how many have you dealt with, how many are outstanding. Can the HOSC share with us now or in writing the record of all complaints and whether they have been resolved or not, and they have not been received or resolved? What are the reasons why they are not resolved? Please provide the breakdown between the public and private facilities. The other question, CEO, we are happy about 100% targets that you have set yourself. However, here is my problem. We have heard many times official telling us about the targets they set for themselves, but when they come and report, they tell us that they have not met those targets. And they started giving reasons, or I should say excuses. My question to you, CEO, is simple. Are there targets that you have set yourself possibly to meet? If you won't be able to meet them, what will be the possible challenges that may lead to you not meeting them? Chairperson, my last request, CEO, can you kindly provide me with names and contact details of your officials that I can contact and refer complaints to? Because, as I said, we as parliaments or MPs receives a lot of those on daily basis. I mean, visually every day. Our people are struggling out there, and we are failing them as government. So from today, I need names so that I can refer these complaints to. Please, if you can just provide us with those contact details. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Just on the same breath, I just would like to, especially when it comes to the conditions and of the clinics and hospitals and the problems that the patients are experiencing when visiting either the clinics or the hospitals right through in South Africa. But I've got a specific case that I definitely would like to ask you as a department that is busy with regulating quality in the health sector. Just to say, there is a clinic named Mandela Sisulu Clinic in Ward 39 in Johannesburg region. What is disturbing in that clinic is that patients are asked or are chased outside the clinic and the gates are locked so that the nurses can be able to enjoy their lunch. Imagine from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So immediately after 3 o'clock, only few patients are allowed to be attended to. Irrespective of whether the communities marched to the clinic to view or for their own memorandum, the situation hasn't changed. What is the role that you can play with regard to this? And I'm asking this because you can't handle complaints. You've got a backlog of complaints and you only handle very few, citing the COVID-related pandemic, which is very much unacceptable. So this is the case. And then how can this case be attended to successfully? Because even if we take these cases to the minister is not responding as we expected really, or he doesn't care at all. So please provide some intervention or like the previous Honorable Bemba has asked to say, give us a number that we can call so that we see service delivery in our clinics and hospitals. The second question is in connection with the critical appointments, but I would like to phrase it differently. To say the presenter said there are vacancies that are existing in the critical appointments, but the appointments depend entirely on the availability of funds. My question is how or when, or in actual fact, give us the number and the position of the vacancies, critical vacancies that are in existence, and when will they be filled? Because you said you only take 4 months to fill in those vacant posts, but right now you have given now a different reason altogether to say it's dependent on the availability of funds. Which are those vacancies and when will they be filled? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I hope I'm audible.
You are. Please continue, Honourable Wilson. Let me just say you will be followed by Honourable Sengwa and Honourable Clark.
Continue. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and forgive me for not turning my camera on. I'm in an area where the connection is very unstable. Thank you to the OHSC for the presentation. But it remains disturbing. It's been disturbing for some time. And while you are observing significant increases in the number of complaints, please believe me when I say you are not the only one. We are literally inundated with complaints from health facilities at the moment. The clinic at Ruth Senecal, people were rushed in there with very high blood pressure, having a problem, and were unable to be put on oxygen because there was none. I mean, that is a basic requirement. Every clinic should have oxygen available. They have been unable to get their prescription medications for 6 weeks now because, and the excuse that we're getting is that Groblersdal Hospital hasn't delivered. The Livingston Hospital has stopped elective orthopedics, will now only do emergency orthopedics and complications from surgeries. So people urgently requiring orthopedic surgeries are being turned away. And in actual fact, the other hospitals and clinics in the areas have been told to no longer refer people to the orthopedic wing. Their lifts are not even working. Their images have to be shared between three or four theatres at a time. It's a nightmare. In the Rob Pereira Hospital, the oncology department has gone, well, I don't know where it's gone. It just obviously doesn't exist. People who are dying in desperate need of oncology treatment, which could be life-saving in the long term, are unable to get oncology treatment. That's sentencing a person to an early death unnecessarily. We've had a death of a person in the Steve Biko Hospital. She lay there for 4 months with a colonoscopy bag that was never changed. She ended up with incredibly infected wounds that were just so massive and so disgusting. And there was nobody to dress those wounds. Her family had to come in and do it for her every day. And it was an absolute mess. And obviously, they're not qualified to do it. We're seeing huge increases in babies born with cerebral palsy as a result of bad deliveries and poor resources. So believe me, we are also swamped. And I actually wonder how many of these complaints actually make it to your offices, because I don't think people really know that they can go to you. And this is why I'm glad to hear that there is a move to make your role more public so that people do know where to go. But it's concerning. It really is concerning. Now, I understand that some of these may be budgetary constraints, but you can't use budgetary complaints as an excuse for poor service delivery. And this is a matter that must be addressed urgently. Obviously, vacancies are a huge concern, because if you don't have the staff, you can't service the people. And I think this all stems down to your comments, and they go hand in hand, that there is a reduction in inspections because of lack of inspections, budget constraints, you're understaffed. However, as we sit here at the moment, this country is pushing for NHI. But you can't even get facilities accredited because you don't have the facilities to do that. If we can't accredit facilities, we can't attach them to the NHI. And we have thousands and thousands of facilities, and we're looking at inspecting 300 at a time. At this rate, you can forget even thinking that the NHI is going to work, because if we can't accredit facilities, get them properly staffed and resourced and meeting a good standard, then we cannot implement the NHI. So that is a major concern for me. Your goal four is to build health infrastructure for effective service delivery. No money, no budget, no inspectors. I'm not terribly sure how you're going to meet your goal for, because quite simply, in the current constraints and with the current facilities, resources, management and leadership that we have, it's not going to happen. And you did mention that you were going to do stakeholder engagements and roll out stakeholder engagements with regards to the OHSC. And it's mandate. And I think all of us would be actually very, very grateful if we could get a list of where those stakeholder engagements are taking place and where they are taking place. So, you know, that some of us may listen in or participate or send appropriate stakeholders to those kind of meetings so that the problems that we are currently facing are addressed. I don't envy your job under your current situation. The fact remains is you do have an important role to play. And if you are unable to do your job, everything else falls away by the side. And I think this is something that we must have a more in-depth in discussion on in Parliament. I thank you.
Honourable Sengwa. Were you able to connect, Honourable Sengwa? If not, we go to Honourable Clark. Honourable Clark.
Sorry, Chairperson, I was on mute. I apologise for that. I would just like to ask the following questions. There's mention of various inspection tools. How does this tool look like? It's It's inspection software, and please clarify this in terms of this definition. There seems to be a decrease in performance for the last year from 10.14% to the estimated performance of 2021-22 to 8%. What is the reason for the projected decrease in public health establishment inspected for compliances? In your view, what are the effects on the low compliance inspections on the quality of healthcare provision? 2025 is the projected date for NHI implementation. As per the bill, only those facilities that meet compliance requirements will be allowed to operate. However, you only estimate that 22% of facilities will be inspected. This is concerning. How will this align with the bill's requirements? And then in slide 39, what are the reasons for only 2.46 compliant being resolved within 30 days? There seems to be a drastic decrease in these indicators from 49.42% in 2018-2019 to 7.3% in 2020. We know COVID played a role. What do you suggest should be done to improve these numbers in order to effectively reach your mandate with our new health climate? Compliance in the healthcare is even more necessary at this stage. What is your current vacancy rate for compliance inspectorates? And then just a last point, and this is just very much a comment, Chairperson. When I have done some hospital visits, I have also found that service delivery is seriously compromised through the system of appointing contractors and service providers. You often find that contractors' contracts are not renewed and they are operating on a month-to-month basis. And then you find that services are not being delivered adequately to hospitals because service providers obviously think, well, you know, my contract is only a month-to-month. I haven't got a proper contract in place, so they actually don't provide the services they should to hospitals. And that is something critical that needs to be looked into. Thank you.
Thank you, Asti Mahlangu. Thank you, Mahlangu. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the report from the OHSC. I have just a couple of questions seeking clarity questions. Number one, may I have this office let me know, according to the human resource of OHSC, are not absorbed in the clinics or in the hospitals? Why? Because you find them lying down in the clinics doing the nurse's clinic, but you don't know their proper work. Why are they absorbed so that they can finish their work properly? Secondly, the Office of Ombudsman and how you report the cases when one reports a case in your, what should happen because the clients have waiting for results or feedback when one launch a complaint, there is no feedback, there is no nothing. And we want that feedback if somebody has done something. Three, how many vacancies exist in the province of KZN across all districts relating to shortage of nurses? What is being done to address this situation? Because when one go to these clinics or hospital, you find that they said we have shortage of nurses, we have shortage of what and what. What are actually the last one still in KZN? There is a serious case closing hospitals and clinics. The one who are on the media now is St. Francis in Zululand district. The clinic was long ago. That hospital was long ago, served four chiefs. Now they close. People are just starving to go to Enkonjeni Hospital so that they can get at their children, so that they can immunize their children. They are serious, serious problem. Lastly, there is a serious problem in the Grace Hospital at Pietermaritzburg, where you find people with cancer are lying there. There is no oncology in the people. There's no one who care these people who come from all the other hospital and get treatment here, but no one do it. There is a case where there is a one who have, they lie in the hospital and they said they didn't find the blood. All these are complaints. We want answers on that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. You've asked so many questions and all very relevant questions, I would think. I would think that some of those might resort with the Department of Health, but it would be up to the OHSC to be able to answer on any of those points. And the points which were raised speak to many different concerns with regards to the APP, and those ones I'm going to mention, and I was going to ask some of the questions. So I'm going to run very quickly to what I thought those were and where my question would have been with regards to that. So there'd be questions of budgetary constraints, staffing targets, relocation expenses, etc. So on targets, what I just want to mention is that we see that they're quite static. The question was asked, how do you explain the processes of determining your annual targets? I think that was already asked. And then your inspection of private healthcare facilities, I see there will only be an increase of 5% target for the next, over the next NTEF. And why would OHSC think that that would be adequate? And then also, can you give us an update on your proposed decentralization project? And also, why do you think that you should again have this section called relocation expenses, which already in the 21-22 budget allocation was allowed for 57 1,000 rand, I think. And in this year, you've actually increased that in the current financial year. And why do you think it needs to be indicated there again? I think I would only ask those questions because, as I said, there have been so many questions raised with you, and you're very welcome to please continue to answer those questions. Let us just be mindful of time in terms of our own programs. I would think you should be able to complete by about 10:15 your responses, if not by the latest 10:20. We can go straight on there, Dr. Kanoshi and the team. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the honourable members for the questions raised. The questions were quite very.
Dr. Kanoshi, yes. I think you might have two devices open at the moment. There's a bad echo. Can you try again? Thank you.
Okay, I will try again, Chair. Yeah, is it better now, Chair?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. I was saying thank you very much to yourself and all the members, honourable members, for the questions raised, and I think they are all relevant. We will try to answer them one by one as the members raise them right from the beginning. So I'll ask the CEO to go first, but we will assist her in answering the questions. Just on the last one that you asked, one of the last ones you asked on decentralization progress, I think that's also an interesting one that we have spoken about within the board. And we are serious that if we can decentralize to other projects, other provinces, within the next year or two, we would be able to cover more hospitals and also address the issue of costs of traveling and accommodation as well. So that's also in our eyes. But can I give the CEO an opportunity first to answer the questions right from the first one? I think it was Member Chira who asked first, and then Member Ismail and so on. I will assist, and others can also assist Dr. Mudaweni. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair Dr. Kinoshi, and we welcome the questions and the clarity-seeking points raised by the honourable members. Honourable Chira requested to know the process of how we set targets, and I believe there are other honourable members that have asked this question. Now, in terms of target setting, we, on an annual basis, we do go through a planning process where a number of variables are considered. One would be the budget that is allocated to the OHSC, and we'll also look at the staff complement that we have in terms of conducting inspections. We'll also look at the denominators of what we have, that is in terms of the health establishment, both in the public and private sector. Representation is quite critical for the OHSC because we have to cover the entire country. So we will then look at which facilities were inspected in the previous year or two and which ones need to be inspected. We'll also look at the size and the population and the number of clinics and hospitals in each of the provinces. So what you'll find is that the bigger provinces with a larger population and more health establishment would then be allocated more targets in terms of inspections. Now, I honourable members, I perhaps do not wish to sound like a broken record in saying that one of the most difficult things for us to do is exactly what I've just explained, because we never have adequate, you know, funds to conduct all the inspections or to even reach the annual target, which will then assist us in inspecting at least one of these inspect a health establishment once every 4 years. In addition to this, we need to also cater for those inspections which will come from the early warning system. And this is the surveillance system that the office undertakes. And these would be inspections that we pick up through what was reported in the media, through some of the issues that we think are a matter of critical importance for the OHSC. So we go through that intense period. We also then look internally, where can we actually be able to save funds and be able to undertake these inspections? I think admit and understand the frustration that is raised by members in terms of the number of inspections being low. That is, in fact, one of our critical concerns, particularly in relation to the, you know, certifying health establishment to be compliant in order to participate in the National Health Insurance Fund. Now, it is for that reason we then are looking into the decentralized approach. But all of these things are really constrained by the budget that we have. we then have to ascertain that with what is allocated, and I think as you have seen from what the chief financial officer shared, is that we actually have seen a decline. So it's that, I think these are the reasons which makes it almost difficult for us, you know, to reach out and to expand on our mandates. The private sector, and the reason why we have lower targets allocated, is that the total number of hospitals in the private sector that we currently have in our database is 431. We know that this will increase with time. So as I've indicated, that we would look at the allocation based also on the overall number that we have. So it is a source of concern from members, and indeed it is also a source of concern for us as the Office of Health Standard Compliance, particularly in actually achieving or coming even closer to what is then stipulated as our mandate and the improvement of quality and also safety in our health establishment. The other question was the recommendation to purchase the property as opposed to leasing for accommodation. We do accept that this was raised in the last meeting. However, where we are now is that we still have a lease that is ongoing. But at the time that we are ready to review the lease, I think all the options would be considered by the board. But also of great consideration would be what we do have in terms of, you know, the allocated amount for the purchase of the building. So this is something that the office will look into. It's the same as the insourcing of cleaners and security personnel. We indeed had contracts that are ongoing, but it is something that at the time that we are supposed to renew, we'll then consider whether in terms of the cost benefit, we do know that we will be able probably to save some funds by insourcing this, and we will consider when the contractual agreements come to the time of review. The timelines to resolve the cases. Yes, the complaints and management unit, as I've indicated, it is the least staff. Now, it would then say the resolution of cases would be delayed. There are those that we resolve in the complaint center where we're able to resolve, I think, 80%, you know, that we are able to reach the 80% target. But because of the unavailability of staff in the complaint center and the staff that is currently working there, we have actually appointed contractual staff in order to assist complaints management as well as the health ombud. So that has a very, I think, serious and adverse impact in terms of the time as resolution of these complaints by the office as well as the health ombud. We admit and agree that we still need probably to do much more in terms of marketing the roles, the responsibility of the health ombud and the OHSC, particularly in those areas, you know, where we have not reached, but we do have a communication strategy which we have just recently revised. We have also undertaken the radio campaign, which we then give this information in local languages so that we can reach more. But in terms of marketing, once again, it is an area that we can always improve on. So we do take the comments by the members. Honorable Ismail, I think I have addressed why the indicator in the private sector is low. I need to indicate and probably clarify that our experience with the private sector in relation to the regulatory work and working with them in developing the tools and consulting with them around the service platforms in the private sector has been fine. However, it is only now that we will know our real experience when it comes to inspections, because it's only now that we finalize the tool and we'll be going out to the private sector. So we can only then comment about our experience during that time. But we do receive some complaints from the private sector that need us to resolve. With regards to the safety in hospitals of staff, as in hospitals and clinics, what is being done by the OHSC. We have regulation 17, and this regulation requires that the OHSC, the health establishment, must protect the users and staff from security threats. So it is a regulation or a standard that we monitor. Now, we monitor this currently. The majority of the health establishment, based on our inspections findings, are not complying with this regulation. But we also monitor this through the early warning system, where we continue to engage with the person in charge to ensure that security issues are addressed, such as the availability of security personnel, whether they've got CCTV cameras and whether they are actually functional and whether they have palisade fences in inappropriate areas. So this is a regulation, but at the moment, from the inspections that have been conducted, it is not satisfactory in terms of how the health establishment are doing. We note, Honorable Ismail, the two hospitals that you have mentioned, we will follow up the OR Tambo Hospital, and I think we would then need to determine what are the issues, but the OHSC will then make a follow-up on what you have mentioned. Honorable Gela, I've tried to explain the number of inspections in private hospitals. It's a question that you also asked, why they are so long. And also our experience with the private sector that we'll only be able to report on once we commence with inspections. And we do have the records of complaints. We will submit to this committee a written report on the complaints that we have resolved, the breakdown, those that we've received from the public and the private sector, and also the resolution. And I think this report will indicate some of the challenges that we experience, because it's such a huge concern for us, because we do know that it actually, you know, in the end, it's going to cause us to have some reputational damage as a regulator if we're unable, you know, to resolve these cases in time. So it is a concern of the board as well as all of us in OHSC. And we will also submit the names and the contact details of the officials which you can contact should you have complaints that you want to lodge with the Office of Health Standard Compliance or the Health Ombud. Having said this, I need to emphasize that we do not want to completely replace the complaints resolution mechanisms at local level, that is at facility level. Even when we undertake our work and raise awareness, we still encourage that complaints should be resolved at the local level. And in doing so, when we provide feedback to the health establishment, we do emphasize to the health establishment, even, you know, which is why we require that the province and the district must always attend when we give this feedback report, so that they must also strengthen the resolutions of complaints at the local level. But those that then reach our office, we do not turn them back. We do resolve those or attempt to deal with those complaints. Honorable Tembekwayo, we admit that the conditions in clinics and hospitals, you know, are quite worrying. And you've mentioned the specific cases in Ward 39, Mandela Sisulu and Gauteng, and the patients being chased away. I think let us accept that we will then make a follow-up in this particular clinic. It is not acceptable that a clinic could be closed so that staff could actually have lunch. We'll definitely make a follow-up on this. We were also affected by the COVID-19 situation in the country, but we're still able to meet the targets, which meant that when we were able to travel, you know, after the restrictions were lifted, in fact, our inspectors were out for the most part of the time. They were out in the field because we had to ascertain that, you know, we reached the target. It was quite difficult because they would then be on inspections for 3 weeks, you know, non-stop, you know, so that we're able to, you know, to at least get closer to our target. And we, and for this financial year, which is ending, we will definitely be able to reach the target. The colleagues will assist with giving the actual numbers in terms of the vacancies, the appointments. But what I want to emphasize and clarify to the committee is that we have an old, or we were still implementing the old organogram, where the vacancies, the critical vacancies, have been filled. But we have an approved revised organogram that has other critical vacancies, like the executive manager in corporate services, which currently is a position that is dually held by the CFO, who's also an executive manager in corporate services. So to us, that is a critical appointment that needs to be filled. We have a position of a chief operations officer. And then also in other functionaries, we have positions that we'd like to fill. And the reason why we mentioned that this would be funds dependent, it's because these are posts that are not currently funded. So if a post is not funded, it becomes very difficult to then fill it on a permanent basis. So that's the reason we mentioned that this would be dependent on the funds availability. Honorable Wilson, yes, we do admit and agree that our experiences are the same in terms of the increase in the number of complaints. We've noted the institutions that we have mentioned. We need to indicate that we've been to Livingston Hospital, and in fact, we actually held, you know, a meeting with the province as part of the feedback. However, we will certainly look into this hospital once again, including Rob Ferreira, which we have mentioned. We are really concerned indeed with the current state of affairs, particularly with regards to certifying health establishment as compliant for the National Health Insurance. We do believe that as an entity, we remain ready to be able to undertake our mandate. But we do have these constraints, that some of which are beyond really our control, with regards to the decentralization model into the other regions. If you look at the budget which was presented today, it doesn't even give us adequate space to go and look, you know, for office space elsewhere. In fact, at some point, we're even considering, you know, seeking accommodation in other, you know, government institutions. This is something that we're looking into, and that is probably the approach we would take, that in the beginning, we may want to look at available space, but we still need to get human resources that would be able to occupy those offices and allow us to expand the inspections. In the report, Honorable Clark, that we will provide on the breakdown of complaints received and resolved, and also the level of risk, we will then indicate those that are resolved. And with regards to Program 3, and I think as you've heard from the health ombud, until such time that we have adequate staff to manage and resolve these complaints, it is unfortunate that we'll probably keep on reporting to the committee that, you know, the numbers that we have resolved are very low, simply because we don't have adequate human resources to be able to deal with these complaints. Honorable Shengwa, in terms of the feedback of complaints, we do, and Dr. Jacobs will also assist me with this, is that we do try, we have a system of how we provide the feedback, but it is an area that we look into in terms of maybe improvements, if there are areas where members have identified that there's a lack of feedback from the office. We'll certainly look into that. With regards to the questions asked, Honorable Shengwa, around KwaZulu-Natal, particularly St. Francis and Nkonjeni Hospital, and the oncology services in Grace Hospital in Pietermaritzburg, I think these questions will be referred to the province so that they can give an adequate response in terms of what is going on there. But if there is anything that would be within our regulatory functions, we'll definitely look into that. I am going to request the CFO to address some of the budgetary questions asked. I'll also then request Dr. Jacobs to also add on the complaints management and resolutions. And I will also, I have tried to deal with the target issue, but I will then also ask Mr. Govuzela to also weigh in on the target planning if there's any additions, and my colleagues if they were to assist me if there's the other questions that I probably did not address. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Over to you, Mr. Mapata, then Dr. Jacobs, and then colleagues, yeah, if there are questions that were left out. Thank you.
Chair, I must explain that the Dr. Jacobs that Dr. Mdaweni is referring to is a different Dr. Jacobs within the OHSC. Okay, just because I think she says the same, she says shares the same surname as yours. So just to stop any confusion that might occur. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was a question raised by Honorable Chira and also Honorable Ishmael on the issue of the lease payments. It is true that the lease payments do take a larger portion of the admin cost, as indicated in the budget. Currently, we have a five-year lease agreement for the office space that we occupy, and that lease agreement will be coming to an end at the end of next year, next calendar year. So this is something which the board will be looking at during the course of this year when we do our planning for next year, taking into account also the borrowing restrictions which the PFMA imposes, because we also note that in order for the OSSC to have its own building, we will need some other borrowing from a financial institution or maybe outright purchase, which we don't have the capacity to do at this stage. But in order for us to borrow, we have to now get all the necessary permissions and guarantees from the National Treasury. So that is something which the board will be looking at during the course of this year. And there was a question on the insourcing. I think the CEO has dealt with that one. We do have some contracts that are running at the moment. In fact, the two contracts are left with less than 2 years to come to an end. We'll be reviewing that situation. There was a question on the vacancies, which the CEO has also touched on. Maybe just to add that currently, in terms of the organogram that was approved by the board, a fully capacitated OHSC would be having staff totaling 323, and currently we have got 129 that are funded. And in the inspectorate, we were looking at having 95, which will also take into account the issue of decentralization. And currently we are sitting at 55 for the inspectorate, which means there's shortage of 40 there. So that is where we are in terms of the vacancies. I think the issue of the critical posts, the CEO has touched on that in terms of the COO post and other posts. There was a question raised by Honorable Clerk on the vacancy rate for the compliance inspectorate, which I've just touched on now. Thank you, Chair. I don't see any other question that had to do with the... Oh, there was a question with regard to the decrease in the ASDA's budget and also the OMBAT was raised by Honorable Ishmael, and also in terms of the OMBAT, also Honorable Chira had raised it. But in terms of that budget, we noted that in 2023-24, the overall budget of the OHSC decreases from 157 to 152. So that necessitated overall adjustments across all the programs. And in terms of ASDAS, one of the innovative ways the division came up with in terms of doing guidance and support for stakeholders was to do it through virtual means. In the past, we would run workshops physically in the provinces, all the provinces. Currently, with the adjustments, we do them through virtual means, and to a certain extent, it has assisted in cost-saving measures in that regard. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mapata. We have attempted to respond to all the questions, Honorable Chair. However, if there's a question that I've left, I would see maybe with an indication of a hand from my colleagues.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Dr. Kanoshi, you were about to say something?
Yes, Chair, thanks very much. I just wanted to add that over and above the responses from the CEO, Dr. Mdaweni, the board is also considering, you know, just to address some of the questions raised by some of the honorable members about the conditions in the health facilities in the various provinces. The board is considering going on a roadshow to as many as possible departments, provincial departments of health, with executive officials within OHSC in the near future, to engage with the heads of departments of health in the provinces on what has been found, you know, during inspections, but also cases that have arisen due to the early warning system that we have, so that we can discuss these matters with the provincial departments of health to effect improvements in their facilities as well. So these roadshows will happen in the near future if arrangements are made on time. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm hoping for us to complete this at 11:30 for the latest, honourable members. There's one follow-up question from honourable Dr. Susan Tembakwayo. Just one question, Dr. Tembakwayo.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. It's just one. I just wanted to find out on the follow-up. I mean, they promised that they will look into the matter of Mandela Sisulu Clinic, but how would I be informed of this process of investigation, and how would they inquire? There's a person that they need to contact, say the clinic will say something different or in contradiction to what I have reported. Can I have a number or so of the person that is going to be dealing with this? Thank you.
A very short question, Honorable Wilson. I'm going to stop that and follow up questions after you, Honorable Wilson. No more after that. Thank you,
Chairperson. I actually did post it on the group. One of the important aspects of health is dentistry. We are seeing huge problems in the dentistry divisions of the hospitals. I have somebody who's been trying to get his teeth attended to for over 4 years. It's resulted in huge complications requiring care, antibiotics, and all those kind of things. That was at the Khara Nkua Hospital. I think this is something we also need to get feedback on, because it's something we seldom hear about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Kanoshi, CEO. Very short replies. Thank you.
Dr. Mdaweni.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Tembakwayo and Honorable Wilson. We've noted the two names of the hospitals. With regards to what you're inquiring about, Honorable Tembakwayo, is that as much as we do inform facilities when we conduct inspections, but we do have the provision of conducting unannounced inspections where we think it is necessary. So the contact person would be Ms. Dikeledi Tsukudu, who's the executive manager, but we will make this information available through the proper channels in the Health Portfolio Committee, and we'll then provide feedback. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to all of you, to the members, to the team from OHSC, all of you very great. Thank you to all of you for your participation today. Honorable members, we are about to conclude. There's just one announcement that I would like to make, and that is that you would please get into contact with our committee secretary, Ms. Majanamba, concerning the travel arrangements for Saturday for the funeral of Honorable Sokacha. There is a request for you to please do such very urgently, still today, so that we are able to complete those arrangements. That has brought us to the end of our meeting, honorable members. You will be receiving the program for next week as we go on to complete it. And have a wonderful sitting today. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair. We still adopt minutes. Can you please adopt minutes?
Adopt minutes, yes. Can you flight those? Thank you very much. The members from the OHSC are welcome to leave. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Maybe a last word? Okay, thank you. Honorable members, there are the minutes of the 23rd of March, 2022, page 1. Note whether you have been deemed to be present. And page 2, whether your apology has been noted. Had you not been present? Page 3. And you will note it was the briefing by the Auditor General of South Africa. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. And that's the last page. Thank you very much. Can I get a mover for adoption of these minutes?
Chairperson, I move for the approval of the minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gela. Any seconder to that approval of Honorable Gela?
I second, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Fasaden. You were first out of the race there, so out of the starting blocks, Honorable Fasaden has seconded. Thank you very much. Anything else, Ms. Majalamba? Have I missed anything else?
Nothing else. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, have a wonderful day today and a wonderful week. And for those, we will be seeing in Richmond, have a safe flight back home. And we will see all of you next week with our program as we take the work of this portfolio committee forward. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.
Stay safe. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You too.
Recording stopped.